The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Welcome to the weekend, my friends. Thank you. Show about money about to begin for the next hour. Jack and I are going to help you have more money. That's what the show really is all about. Got a great guest, a couple of great guests, as a matter of fact. Help set the stage for 2023. Mr. Don Velo, welcome back to the show. Don, of course, is a market technician. Him and I used to work at one of the big six banks, so I got to know this good man. And, well, we've been friends for over two decades. Happy anniversary, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, Wolf.
Always, always. The January effect. Prior to me joining Bay Street, I remember listening to a lot of business radio when I worked in radio, and I learned about the January effect. Why don't you talk to share with us, because from a academic point of view, what is the January effect, Don, and how significant it is that January puts up a good showing? Because so far this year, we're off to a good start.
Yeah, historically, it's the last five trading days of the year, plus the first two trading days in the new year. Whenever the markets go higher, that's an indication that the U.S. equity markets will continue going higher for the rest of the year. And that signal actually did happen this year. We did see the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average go higher during that period.
Yo, you said it's the last five trading days of the year. So, in fact, the last 5 days of December plus the first two trading days in January makes up the stage for the January effect, either up or down?
That's correct.
Oh, I thought it was the first week of January that sets the tone for the year, followed by the month itself setting the tone. So, starting the first trading day of the new year, you're saying, in fact, that it's front end loaded. Nonetheless, look, we are off to a decent start again. Last year in 2022, it was the exact opposite, off to a weak start. And I needn't share with you how the year ended. Now, again, friends, if you were partners with Jack and I, we got through last year, I think, quite handsomely, down mid-single digits, I'd say, you know, down about 6% across the book. Nothing to sneeze at. Again, Jack, you and I were up 20% 3 years in a row.
So it's important. Yeah, it's important to highlight the fact that you're giving back some gains, but you're certainly outperforming in a down market, which is, you know, bear markets are challenging. There's lots of landmines to step on. You talk about technology, multiple, you know, technology companies, I'm going to say COVID darlings, were down 70%+. We owned a few of them, but we cut them well before they trough. So cut names when they weren't working and look for opportunities in energy and materials and a lot of Canadian centric stuff that did outperform on a relative basis last year.
Yeah, yeah. And again, the giving back gains versus are you down debate. And Jack, I knew I'd get you with that one, because it's incredible. You know, clients who've been with us for 10 years. And, you know, we have very, very good clients who truly understand the long-term ramifications and benefits of investing properly. But again, if you've been in the game for 10 years, you made a ton of money. Our clients are up. Well, the compounded return net of fees is 11%. Giving back 5% off the peak, you're still up significantly. But no, I'm down. Well, here you are. You're down 5% from peak, but you're only giving back a bit of gain. And it's par for the course. So I'm going to share with you, and Don, I've been trying to encourage Jack to watch the Bernie Madoff miniseries on Netflix. Bernie Madoff, of course, the biggest fraudster in history, defrauded $64 billion from American and international citizens. European citizens were part of the scheme, or the scam, and the fraud and the theft and all those bad things that it was. But it's a very fascinating story. And again, what caught me was the old adage, Don, of if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Bernie Madoff's fund was up 96.2% of the time, down just over 3% of the time, which is so not possible. So again, Don, you've seen the market over and over again. Volatility has to be tolerated or not.
Oh yeah, definitely has to be tolerated. There are periods of time of the year when the markets are particularly volatile, should we say. That's, for example, between the beginning of January to the middle of March, is a very volatile period for the U.S. market. It goes up and down very sharply, but effectively doesn't do anything. It ends up with the S&P 500 making no return and the Dow Jones Industrial Average actually losing 1% return.
I saw that work of yours. I always thought basically the best time in the market was end of October, middle of October until May. But you've actually highlighted there's a bit of a window even in the sweet spot that tends to be a bit of dead money, that Jan to March period. But Canada does tend to outperform in that period, doesn't it?
That's the important thing. That's the secret news for people owning Canadian stock.
Okay, don't tell them. Don't tell them then. Oh, sorry.
Historically, the best time to own Canadian market is from the middle of December right through until March the 3rd.
And why is that?
Well, a very good reason. That's when people are receiving their big bonuses for the end of the year, and they're taking a lot of those bonuses and they're putting them into the stock market, into their TSFAs and RSPs. And that pushes the Canadian market up significantly, particularly relative to the U.S. market.
And of course, the RSP season is the big season. But friends, again, do not make RSP season the big season. Average into the market. Buy, invest, work with your advisor on a monthly basis. As you get paid, you should put some money aside and invest it. Once again, the secret sauce is compounding. Sir Isaac Newton, or was it
Albert Einstein?
Albert Einstein. Well, Sir Isaac
Close
Newton.
Enough.
They worked together. They're 300 years apart, but they did work together and they thought together. But yeah, it's the eighth wonder of the world is compounding. And again, how long does it take to actually generate the true fruits of compounding? Jack and I talk about this every day in the office. It takes about 25 years. Friends, if you want to have a visual, you're going to draw a line across a piece of paper horizontally. And then it can slope upward like a green run on a ski hill, a little upward slope. But then all of a sudden it becomes a blue, a black, and a double black to the upside. That's what happens. If you take a compounding chart and stretch it out 40 years, it looks like a hockey stick. Now, I'm going to say something else. We're about to do our quarterly or our monthly client call, Don. In fact, we're going to send you an invitation to. We have a very good package. Jack, please include Don in the call. Don, try to tune into our call. It's next Tuesday. It is exclusive to our clients. About 300 clients or families that we take care of, 700 clients. This is exclusive to our clients who pay us to manage our wealth. And every now and then we do bring in a special guest. Don, we tune into it. But in it, we had some data point from Bespoke. In terms of decades, and this is sort of like stocks for the long run, there once was a period where there was no 10-year rolling losing period, 10-year rolling average losing period in the stock market. The tech wreck sort of killed that. So it became, there's been, I think the worst performance in a 20-year period, Jack, is about up 2 or 3%. And the worst performance on a 30-year period for the stock market is up 8. I repeat, the worst performance on a rolling 30-year average for the U.S. stock market is up 8. And I think the average is up 12 over a 30-year period. I say the odds, once again, are stacked in your favor. Don, I want you to speak to that.
Yeah, I certainly agree that the longer term, your best thing to do is own the market. For example, you mentioned those numbers for the U.S. market. No, just something added to that. There are actually times that you can, or certain times of the, say, the four-year presidential cycle, which are better to invest in others.
Yep.
Turns out the best year to own the U.S. market is the third year of the U.S. presidential cycle.
And we are in the
third year.
Right now, 2023, third year of the market. It is the best year. So again, Don, in my conference call, it's pretty funny. Jack often and our partner, Zach, put together a slide deck. Based on all the stuff we've read for the last 30 days, we put it aside, put together a slide deck. Then they handed it to me for approval. And I went through the slide deck and 35 pages. Honestly, give me a diamond. I'm gonna jump out the window. I just got to cut a hole so I can exit this building. I want to cut my wrist. It was like all negative. Everything was negative. And I said, wait, we got to do something here. I can't speak pure negativity. And the reason being, my accounts up. Our accounts are up almost 5% this year. And I'm looking at the charts, and they're pointing higher. So all the strategists, the economists, the data, recession coming, employment holding, but interest rates still stubbornly high, all negative. But the market is telling me something differently. Not all parts of the market, but certainly many parts of the market are pointing in the right direction. We'll throw gold in the equation. Big cap tech. Tech stocks not looking good. High-priced, high-valuation stocks not looking good. But across the board, commodities look better. Even the banks look better. Insurance stocks look decent. Travel stocks look interesting. There's a long list of better-looking chalk starts. So we start with a negative slide deck, Don, but then I start to talk about some of the positives. And the positives are the market. It's telling me something. Don, what is the market telling you right here, right now? There's a symphony taking place, I believe.
Yeah, it tells me something different for each market. For example, for the Canadian market, it's very positive. We're in the period of seasonal strength. For the U.S. market, not so much until, say, the middle of March. But international markets, things like Europe and also particularly the Far East, are looking very, very attractive right now.
They're huge. The European market up over 20% from its low. No one's talking about it.
That's right, and it still looks very, very attractive relative to, say, the U.S. market. So that tells you something. Maybe not the best market this year for the U.S. equities side. Maybe look at more Canadian, and maybe look at more international, particularly European and Far East markets.
Oh, emerging markets have been so tough.
That's the reason why they're going to probably perform, Wolf, is that we talked about it before in our conference call. You look at asset classes, and over time, things mean revert. So asset classes, whether it's large cap, small cap, commodities, international, all fixed income, long duration, short duration, all these different asset classes, they have their time in the sun. And the fact is, international equities have underperformed since the great financial crisis.
Or longer, yeah.
Europe is in the middle of a recession, and the stock market is up 20%. So that does speak to the fact that it can be a very challenged economy, which everyone expects. And the market can still perform relatively well, whether it's in Canada or the U.S.
Yeah, no question. Japan and Europe look much better. Big improvement. And they're in the depths of the recession. Fascinating stuff. Another data point that we do have in our deck, and we are going to go to a quick break, get back to Don Velo. But, Don, I want you to ponder this. For the most part, bear market lows, I think, unequivocally, have occurred in the middle of a, or at least during a recession, yet we are not officially in a recession yet. Does that truly mean that the market has to go lower one more time in 2023? Hang on to that thought, Don. Let's take a quick break, pay some bills around here, and get right back to Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
Let's take a break. Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
There must be someone up above. Say, come on, Brittany. You got to come on.
That's what you got to do, my friends. Surely, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in buy and hold. Doesn't sound exciting. And honestly, it is so not easy. But, you know, if you're investing, you want to be in the game. Once you leave the game, it is so hard to get back into the arena. We've seen people try to do it, exit to, during the height of COVID, exit during the height of the next recession coming. Sometimes they don't exit poorly, but they never get back in properly. And in true hindsight, should they have done it? Nope. It costs them money over the long term. We've seen it 100% of the time when people have done it. Jack, please, you want to pipe in here? I can see you.
Absolutely.
Jumping up and down.
There's times when people take themselves out of the game, meaning they cash their chips in and they say, I can't stand this volatility. I'm going to come back when the markets are quieter and more calm. And in that environment, things are more certain and valuations are higher. And then there's the other side of the equation, Wolf, where the game takes them out. And we saw some of that with crypto, with meme stocks.
Good point.
You don't want to put yourself in a position
ever
with high concentration of leverage and high concentration of individual security selection.
Yeah,
that can actually take you out of the game. And you talk about compounding, you don't allow time to work in your favor because you have nothing left. So the game can take you out too, Wolf. It's a good point to make.
So Don, you know what's amazing is market technicians, guys who look at charts and cycles. So we know two of them who are true pros. You're one of them, Don. And then, of course, there's Javed Mirza, our own in-house technician, who you also know. The sentiment from the technicians is perhaps a new bull market's beginning. Things are looking quite interesting here. When you speak to strategist upon strategist upon strategist, they're negative.
Yeah, anyone looking at the fundamentals right now is negative because they see an earnings recession in the next quarter, maybe two.
Yep.
But the charts are telling you something different. The price, the volume, the charts, as you said, that Don focuses on is telling a very different story.
And
than
the seasonal aspect. So Don, tell me, what do you think, Don? Again, we sort of know what you think, but speak to all of it. Speak to the technical side of things and speak to the economic backdrop and the fundamental side of, you know, earnings rolling over perhaps in 2023.
Yeah, historically, the bottom of the four-year presidential cycle is the second year of the presidential cycle, and of course that was last year.
Yep.
And we're following this pattern to the T. We had important lows in Canadian and U.S. equity markets right around the middle of 2022. And now, from here on, the markets have a history of moving higher throughout the four-year cycle. Now, the reason why we had these lows last year was because of concerns about inflation and the Fed's action to reduce inflation. Fortunately, the inflation data has, in the U.S., has started to roll over. In fact, we just had an important report coming out earlier last week, the Producer Price Index, which showed a much larger drop in inflation pressures than previously expected. That's setting up the stage for the Federal Reserve to stop cutting back money supply and once again setting up the economies to improve. Now, that's not quite the same in Canada. Look for next week the Bank of Canada to raise the lending rate to the banks one more time. But that probably will be the last increase in interest rates in Canada, and the increase in U.S. Probably will peak out early in February. But that's setting up the stage for the peaking of inflation and ultimately an improvement in the economy. So we're setting up for a pretty good move in the second half of 2023 in both U.S. and in Canadian equity markets.
Okay, so I want to talk about the boring business of the bond market. Bonds have been negative or were negative 2 years in a row. There has never been a period in time when bonds went negative 3 years in a row. Why talk about bonds? Why do bonds matter? Bonds are ballast in your portfolio. They keep you in the business. They keep you in the game. And they prevent you from getting shaken out once again. Generally speaking, when stocks go down, bonds tend to go down a lot less and often, in fact, go up when stocks go down. So I repeat, bonds often go up when stocks go down. Not always, but often. But they are the ballast and more stable part of one's portfolio. I'm going to now say, especially when bonds are trading down 2 years in a row, the likelihood of making money in bonds is that much greater. And Jack is the expert in talking about mean reversion. You're very good at that, Jack. I.e., one of the reasons why you believe Europe is going to perform well, because it's underperformed for so long. It simply has to mean revert. So the 60-40 portfolio was a standard portfolio that was basically applicable and suitable to most people. For the last two decades, I'm going to say it wasn't that appropriate, but it did work. Nonetheless, 60-40 portfolio means 60% of your money in stocks, 40 in bonds, and you leave it alone, and it works until bonds don't work. Last year was the one year where both stocks and bonds went down. How do you feel, Don, about the bond market right here, right now? Would you continue to be underweight bonds, or would you be more of a 60-40 kind of a guy if that was your interest in the first place, a 60-40 portfolio?
Yeah, looking at the chart on the U.S. Bond market, I'm looking at the TLT, which is the longer-term U.S. Treasury note, and it's interesting how if you had invested in that security, it's appreciated quite significantly just during the last 2 months.
Yeah, how much is up, Don, off the bottom?
Okay, the bottom was reached right around the beginning of November, around the 92 level.
Yeah.
And right now, that particular bond is trading at 108.
I looked at it. It was around 17% off of the bottom.
Yeah.
And plus, if you expect yields to go lower because the economy is slowing, which traditionally that's what happens, yields go lower as the economy slows, you'd expect further capital appreciation in that long bond. So the question that you had, will bonds have three negative years? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no on that one.
Don, do you think you can buy bonds in here and tuck them into your portfolio? And if you do that, will they do what they're supposed to do, provide some ballast to your portfolio?
there's a very good chance that you will get additional appreciation in bonds, because what we're seeing is interest rates in both Canada and the United States in the long-term bond markets are starting to come down.
Yeah, and that pushes bond prices higher.
That's exactly correct.
But it's incredible. Again, the TLT, and its friends, if you're curious, type it on your computer, TLT. It's the Long Bond Index. It's a 20-year plus bond index. So basically it would have some 20-year, 21, 22, 23, 24, 20, right up to 30. It's the longer end of the bond curve. It's not just the 30-year bond. But again, people think bonds are boring. last year they weren't boring, unfortunately, to the downside. But to buy a bond at $92 and sell it at $108 in a matter of 2 months and make a 17% return in this interest, it's quite fascinating that you can actually pull that move in bonds. Not the intention. Don, my question to you, do you think if you were to buy even the TLT or some corporates or a little basket, a little bond mutual fund or bond ETF, a basket of bonds, do you think you can make 5% compound over the next 5 years? I think you can.
Yeah, I think the odds are very good because the rates are still coming down. And there's a pretty good chance that you'll see bond prices not move significantly higher, but there'll be enough to...
But you've got to get the coupon and some capital appreciation.
I would say you
exactly.
Traditionally what you return is, if you hold the bond to maturity, is whatever the yield is. So if you're buying a 5% yielding bond, hold it to maturity.
You get 5%.
That is your return.
Hold on. And Alabama Shanks. Alabama. I do the music for a reason here, guys.
But the fact is, you can get some of that return front-end loaded. If the economy slows down, if inflation starts to roll over, as it seems like it is, then you don't have to potentially hold it for the longer term to realize that gain.
Yeah, no, and again, when you open up some of the bond indexes or a bond fund, you realize how complex they are. I dare not try to build a bond portfolio. I could not do as good of a job as some of the international money managers. The bond market is, my friends, opaque. Don't ever forget that. I do strongly recommend you allow the experts who have access to such inventory of bonds internationally to do a bond portfolio. That's the proper type of portfolio. When it comes to equities, Jack and I do a very fine job picking those. Again, why? Because my partners like Don Beal are helping us out. Indeed. Do we have much time left for the hit? Are we running out? Plenty of time. We got more time here, Don. So let's carry on. Give us your wild call for the year. Year 2023, third year of the presidential cycle, off to a good start, coming off of a moderate base. In other words, the U.S. market was down 20% last year. Jack theory, mean reversion. How do you think the year is going to play out, Don, and what type of volatility do we have to endure? And you obviously don't believe a new low is going to be made. What kind of downside risk do you see we have to endure this year?
Yeah, what we're looking at is, should we say, a very, very volatile period between now and probably the middle of March for both the U.S. and Canadian markets, with the Canadian market outperforming the U.S. market quite significantly. But after you get past that, then there's got lots of reasons to believe that economies will start to improve once again. We get past the COVID problems, and you're going to see equity markets right around the world improve quite significantly. On average, during the third year of a U.S. presidential cycle, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, this goes back to 1930, has gone up 14% per period. So that's something to look forward, particularly in the second half of this year. So that's one thing, but don't forget international markets, things like the Chinese market. They're just starting to come out of COVID.
Remember that tone of mine, friends at home, tells you probably should buy because I ate it. And that's what makes it such a difficult one. And difficult trades are often the best trades. True or false, Don?
Yeah, they certainly are, because often it's hard to follow all the markets around the world. The key is you want to follow the easiest way of playing these investments. Often that means owning exchange-traded funds. For example, if you're going to play Europe or you're going to play Asia, just buy an ETF for that sector. And whereas in Canadian markets, the U.S. markets, we have greater knowledge of individual companies, so you may want to
often what happens to us, when we look international, the news comes to us later because we're not in that market. It's a foreign market. So foreign news takes time to cross the pond. Even in this day and age of zeros and ones and connectivity, we focus on our home bias. And here it's in North America. It goes south of the border as well. That's our home bias. That's what we pay attention to. By the time Europe moves 20%, I become aware of it. Now it's up 20. And then I've often bought the Chase and only to see it roll over and get back and me put my tail between my little wolf legs. So I ask you again, do you think at these levels you can make some money going long Europe to begin with and then maybe in China from these levels?
Yeah, my preference is to go to the Far East because, as you're right, the European market's already taken a huge run during the last little while. I think the Far East market, that means Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, China, Vietnam. These are all economies which are starting to show some really signs of significant recovery. Now, the easier way of doing it, let me give you an example of one ETF that can do it. The symbol is AIA. That is an exchange-traded fund for the Far East. Or Asia. So
yep.
Just by owning that one asset, you get a kind of an overview for the whole thing. So that's kind of an interesting way of doing it. But the key is to, as you mentioned, you invest in these things for a period of time. You don't invest it for a long period of time.
Yeah, so when I'm talking about hold on, folks, I'm talking more about in the broad market. But again, part of the way to hold on successfully is try to trade around the market, stick with what's working, what's about to work, and you know something's not working. Well, you have to at some point say goodbye to it. So, those looking for new ideas, new edge in the game, Don Velo, market technician, philanthropist as well. Volunteer, you still volunteering, driving cancer patients to and from their treatment, Don?
Actually, no. The reason is because of COVID, they've closed down their operations here in Oakville. And so when they do become fully open, my wife and I plan to resume our services at that location.
God bless you for doing that. That's a beautiful service you provide. That's true boots on the ground, my good friend. Once again, have a great weekend, Don. Thank you for spending some time with us. We're going to get into the behavior of finance. Jack, behave. Hi-Fi Radio, 640 Toronto. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Welcome back, UFO, for Amos Nadler, the doctor. Hey, you are now a professor of Wall Street, trade analytics. Give you some Michael Schenker there, buddy. Did it work?
It definitely works. I was trying to catch the doctor connection. I mean, in a way, I'm a doctor of, instead of diagnosing, cancers, I diagnose trade biases. And people,
I need help, man. I totally need help. It's tough. It's funny. We're sitting there on a loss. Medtronic chart looks bad. The research analysts are getting really cold on the name. It's great business. They make hips, they make knees, but they're not executing very well, and the market doesn't like it. And 2 days ago, I wrote it down, said this name should be sold. Day later, it's a little lower. Day later, it's a little lower. I said, why don't I just sell it? I know it looks lower, but I don't. I wait and wait and wait. And it's difficult to admit and to accept being wrong. Hey, we're supposed to be smart guys. We don't like being wrong. So your trade analytics software and processes is very, very intriguing to someone like me. I'm going to ask you, does it work? Does it truly help advisors have a better understanding of their biases that they have that cost them money?
Mm-hmm. Well, you nailed it on the head mentioning the ego part. And especially us guys have a tough time seeking help. I mean, we don't even go in for our physicals for the most part, much less we want to go in and have our decisions analyzed by this algorithm. But absolutely, if you are able to take feedback and you are coachable, which, by the way, is what made Michael Jordan the star that he was and probably still is, was the ability to be coachable. So that condition is a prerequisite. If you're coachable and humble enough to say, you know what, I can be better, and tell me how I can be better. If I want an edge, I want to serve my clients better. That's the first prerequisite, because people that don't have that, no matter how much information you give them, they're not going to listen. They're not going to admit to any possibility. The data that I could present to a person like that would show them the invisible biases that they have, because what we do is we quantify the bias. Like the one you mentioned being down on Medtronic. Okay, So if you found a better allocation of capital opportunity, you would cut your losses. But because of loss aversion, A, and mean reversion, people mean, oh, it's coming. They think, oh, it's coming back, it's coming back. I don't want to do the hard thing and cut the loss. I can show you analytically what that's cost you over time because we have a metric called buy loss performance. And it just shows basically what the performance has been of all the buys, all the sells. And we have an objective data set that can show you every type of decision you make, what the return has been on that sub-portfolio. And then you can have a conversation. You can decide, do I need to make better decisions? Where do I get tripped up? Is there a pattern? That's the beginning of really, really conquering the biases, understanding your emotions, and using objective data to make decisions for the benefit of your portfolio.
Got that, Jack?
I got it. And you know what? Being coachable is very important. Amos makes a great point there. So Amos, when you present these facts to the advisors or to whatever investors you're working with, what is their response? What's the typical response of an unsuccessful investor and then a successful investor? Because honestly, everyone can improve.
Absolutely. You see the unsuccessful people who actually pony up and have the conversation. They will initially be resistant, and then you say, I can trace the decisions that led to this massive loss over time. And rookies are quite different from experienced people, but I can tell you guys what most rookies do, and that's loss chase. They make a bad asset allocation at the very beginning. They see a loss, and what they'll do is, because it feels bad to be in a loss position, instead of thinking clearly, would I invest in this if I weren't in it already, they'll double down. And then it keeps going down. And they're catching falling knives all the way down, and essentially, you know, they will... Those are the kinds of self-directed or even advisors who will try to leave the profession because they've lost so much money.
We just know someone who did just that. They were averaging down in Shopify. They built a big position. They kept buying. And guess what? They truly walked out the business. And it was amazing. They had a great year a couple of years ago. But
that goes to the initial point, though, Wolf, being able to admit that you're wrong. You know, if you're very sophisticated, you don't need to be super highly sophisticated individual and intellect to be able to invest in the market. You need to, you know, be able to take a measured response, look for opportunities. You know what? Admit, maybe I just made a mistake. Move on. Find a better opportunity.
You know, one of the greatest quotes I ever picked up, and I repeat it to Jack all the time, is trade what you see. And again, I don't like the word trade per se, because I prefer the word investing. And Jack and I are both very patient individuals. We have no problem holding on for the long haul. But again, holding on when the trend's going up is one thing. You don't want to necessarily hold on when the trend has broken.
To use another, exit and come back is the
right mantra. So I repeat, trade what you see. But often what you see is in conflict perhaps to what you believe. So I want you to speak about that. Trade, you see a trend taking place, but you just don't believe it.
I'm going to say, you take another sports analogy, right? Hockey, right? It's a game of offense, a game of defense. The game, the transition is what really matters. Where the game transitions, where you go from offense to defense, defense to offense. If you can do that effectively, you will be a good hockey player, to use the sports analogy. Same with investing. You need to pivot. When you recognize that, okay, meme stocks are finished, they're done, technology is rolling over, where is the opportunity? Was it energy? Was it materials? Was it financials? Look for different opportunities in the markets because they do present themselves. You just got to open your eyes.
Well, the pivot is very, very key. Trading what you see sounds easy, but Amos, you are the behavioral finance expert, the doctor in it. Why is it so difficult?
You know, human nature, guys. We're not optimized for the environment that we're in lots of ways. I mean, we could talk about this in terms of diet. We could say, you know, the foods that are available to us in such plentitude and low cost are the types of molecules that were very scarce in previous societies. And so you wonder, a lot of the health issues that we have today is that we now binge on those things because we get such a big neural reward from those things.
Okay, but by the way, Health Canada says two drinks a week now. Please. Are you kidding me? Two drinks a week. I got a problem with that. I got a wine cellar at home that's going to last me three lifetimes at that pace, buddy. I'm going to be creating vinegar. I'd be using it for cooking. Almost like, we got to take a quick break, but I want you to hang on to that, what you're talking about. This is Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. Try to have some fun around here, weave in some cool tunes, and help educate. And again, it's a bit of a boring topic, so we try to make it fun. You know something? I love what I do, and so does Jack. And that's why we keep going to work. Help you out. Stay tuned. Hi-Fi Radio 640. What city? Toronto.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Welcome back. Yeah, off air, Jack was talking about putting your name on a big stadium, talking about the big crypto exchange scammer, FTX. Bernie Madoff didn't put his name on a stadium. Didn't need to. It was pure fraud. But we saw it here at home, Research Emotion having a staff party, booking the Skydome, it was, I think, at the time, and booking Van Halen in. Can you imagine a corporate party like your staff? Why are you guys ever going to bring in Van Halen? Good golly. Well, it's usually, it's the mark of a top. It's just a mark of, okay, things really can't get any better. And if they don't get any better, they're probably going to get worse. And that's exactly what happened to Research Emotion. And obviously with FTX,
I was going to say, crypto assets. So Amos, I would say you're an expert in the space. Talk to us about digital assets, where they're at. What's your view on it? Obviously new technology, and you know what? It's not unique for you, a new technology, to go through this type of downdraft and then obviously flush out some of the weaker players and then the real businesses float to the top. So anyways, long term, what do you see for digital assets, where they're at now, and where are they going?
Yeah, well, great. That's a great setup. I mean, this idea that there's a lot out there that's thrown around. You can think about a close analog being the technology boom of the late 90s, you know, came all crashing down, and that whatever survives will thrive in the long term. You can look at Amazon and Google and those that actually do deliver actual meaningful fundamental value to investors long term. When we get into what's different about digital assets is that, first of all, that term is a bit of a misnomer in a way, because an asset has a definition and is associated with a fundamental value. Blockchain technology, which is an incredibly efficient way of communicating across parties with zero trust, is a different thing than cryptocurrencies. And so when we even use these terms, we have to be pretty specific about what we mean. And cryptocurrencies, which we throw out the word crypto, we typically forget about the blockchain technology with its actual business application. We're talking about Dogecoin and Bitcoin and Ether, Ethereum, all that stuff. And if you actually look at it, and I spent 2 years in the space as the first chief economist of crypto, and if you look actually at what these coin camps, these specific coins are, they just copy the code base from GitHub, put it on another repository on their GitHub, and slap a different sticker on it and say, we are a different coin. Like, it's an actual copy-paste, and now you've invented something. Like, is there a business in that? Is there fundamental value in that?
Yeah, it's called Xerox.
It's an opportunity. you are copying something, but the copy is not worth anything. So my view of cryptocurrencies is like the most incredible opportunity to take advantage of people's innate excitement about new things and the rise of technology that enabled people to act immediately on the impulse is what made it the greatest bubble and made Sam and these other, you know, other founders of these exchanges extremely wealthy using a human weakness and lack of an innate due diligence ability, because the distance between decision and action is very limited nowadays. Where in the old days, you know, during the Mississippi Company bubble or tulip bubbles, there were like multiple intermediary steps you had to do to part with your money. Now, create an account, 5 minutes, you know, money comes out of your account, and next thing you know, you now quote unquote own an asset. Huh. So technology gave way to lubricate the path for people to dump their money into these scams, essentially.
It made it too easy, didn't it? In many, many ways. It's interesting because having a part of the theme of the day is okay. If you want to have something to talk about and be a part of the conversation and get a bit of the endorphin rush, it's okay. The key is what Jack said at the very beginning, concentration risk. Too much of anything can be very, very toxic and take you out of the game. And this brings me back to my little home renovation I did during COVID, where I had a locksmith. I respect every profession. I respect hardworking people. Muchos respect to anyone who goes to work. Window cleaners, to garbage, everything in between, lots of respect. And he said, yeah, my crypto assets are down over $500,000.
I sent $500,000 to a man who drives around in a van and installs and repairs locks, Schlage locks, like basic locks. How much is this guy making an hour? 30, 40 bucks, maybe 50 if on a good day. I don't know. How many locks does he have to replace to make up that loss? There's no reason why, you know, an average working person should have $500,000 in crypto assets. They should have a nice, diversified, boring portfolio of some pipelines and some banks and some blue chip tech stocks and some railway stocks and some all those pay dividends, by the way. Basic stuff that you understand. You guys, you drive by Tim Hortons. Any lineups? Maybe not a bad company to buy. Big lineup, a lot of people buying this stuff. That's the type of stuff Jack and I like to own, small amounts of it. And it turns out to be a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful potpourri.
Well, those businesses, Wolf, are based off of cash flow. When you own them, as a business owner, right, they actually pay you cash.
Because they sell something.
Exactly.
A little cup of coffee.
Things that people want. It's called demand. Supply, demand.
Right.
Those types of things. Back to fundamentals, back to economics. Almost. You made a comment there, crypto being the greatest bubble in history. Do you see some of these names recovering from it? So Ethereum and I'll say Bitcoin. They're the two leaders. Are they going to recover from this?
So when you say recover, I don't think it's going to hit that the previous spike. Like, I think that these are unfolding stories. And Ethereum is technically, or I'd say technologically distinct from Bitcoin. Like, underlying technology is different. Like, They're lumped together, but they are radically different. If you actually do the due diligence on them, you see they're quite different. Bitcoin has not particularly evolved. Ethereum tries, you know, to evolve to meet demand and to use an adjunct, you know, sort of gas to use the blockchain. The price of the asset doesn't reflect the fundamental value of the asset. So when you ask about recovery, what I think about, will there be convergence between the market price and some sort of fundamental value? The market price, visible, everybody can see that anytime. The fundamental value of this thing, this quote-unquote asset, that is TBD, to be determined. And it's not going to be generating a cash flow. That's not what the currency does. These entities, these exchanges, these decentralized exchanges, these places where you stake your currency, they attempt to create a cash flow from staking your coins in that space. But that's not the currency itself producing. That's an intermediary taking advantage of essentially a spread and then loaning the money out. But when you ask about price recovery, I'm saying the question is, what is the technology delivering, and is there a cash flow that would be delivered to a holder of the asset? I don't see that.
I would say there are other stores of value that don't create cash flow. You look at
gold,
art, you look at gold. Those are, you know, traditionally things that people look at as non-traditional, non-cash flowing assets that are a store of value. Is Bitcoin in that category?
That argument has been made many times. Michael Saylor, Mark Cuban, the list is quite long, and the people that say it is a store of value. But those objects you mentioned just now, gold has tremendous physical use in electronics, in even dentistry, in jewelry. It is used. It has a functional use in our world now. Factories use gold. Artwork people like to come see, and they'll pay to go see that, or they'll pay to resell it. When they say Bitcoin is a store of value, it's saying that money is sitting in it, but it has no intrinsic value in the same way that gold or art does. And so I would love to invite somebody to argue. I'd love to hear the other side of it, but I found it to be a fairly unconvincing argument because, and I'm quoting Warren Buffett here, he's saying the only value you're getting in holding and speculating this asset is what somebody else will pay for it.
Yeah, that's the greater fool theory.
Hi-Fi Radio, 640 Toronto. That's it. We're done for the week. We will be back next week right here on 640. More guests. Jack, my producer, great job as always. Amos Nadler, the professor of Wall Street. I am the Wolf on Bay Street. Any questions, you can check us out. WolfOnBayStreet.com, WolfgangKlein.com. I'm sure if you Google, yes, we still use that little tool, Google Amos Nadler. You can find a little bit more about his trade analytics software. Very, very intriguing stuff. But as we said, the trend is your friend. May it be on your side and may the wind be at your back. Have a great weekend, and I will speak with you next Saturday right here on 640 in Toronto.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.